Hello, listeners, and welcome to Film Club episode 19. No, 19. I didn't even plan to do a Paul Hardcastle reference. It just happened. This week we are covering the film Breathless from 1960, as we mentioned, not to be confused with the Richard Gere version from 1983. Although we did say last episode, if you want to watch that as well, then you can do, and let us know what you think about both of them. But the one that we're going to be concentrating on this week is the 1960 Jean-Luc Godard version. It came out of our public pick last week. I say we because I am, of course, as I should do, introduce myself. I am Mal Foster, and with me, as always, is Mr. Daniel Seraph. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you, Mal. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty good now that I've finished Breathless, and we'll get into that in just a moment. We should say, as always, if you haven't seen the film before, spoilers will be abound. So if you haven't seen it before, then you might want to pause this and then go watch it and then come back. Otherwise, you know, it might be ruined for you for eternity. So, Breathless, 1960, Jean-Luc Godard, one of the most highly acclaimed and adored films by many, considered a classic, I think would be safe to say, and often considered like a real sort of high point for especially French cinema in terms of new wave. First time I've seen it. You've seen it before, I believe?
Yeah, I've seen it many times before, actually. Yeah, I love this film.
You do? Okay, well, we'll start with you first, and why you love the film.
God, why do I love the film? I mean, that's actually a really hard question. See, for me, I just think that Breathless kind of defines everything that film should be in my eyes. You know, the whole French New Wave was conceived at a time when François Truffaut, the film critic who then went on to direct 400 Blows, basically said, you know, that French cinema was kind of a cinema which was dictated by screenwriters. You know, the directors were really only considered people who kind of took the script and had performers and added pictures. You know, they didn't really have a lot of power. And you were looking at Hollywood at the time, and, you know, the work of Alfred Hitchcock and the work of Orson Welles, and French cinema didn't really have any of that. You know, they just had filmmakers that would do things that are very literary and theatrical. And so along came kind of the French New Wave, and it really kind of put its own kind of stamp on French cinema, and really showed everything that you can do with a camera. You know, it really showed film to be an art form in its own right, using lots of very interesting and kind of disorienting stylistic techniques, kind of favouring style over substance in the film, over kind of traditional narrative and traditional plot. And I just think it's so kind of influential, especially on so many films that came after it. But I think even, I wouldn't even say that it's a film that's dated. I still think that, you know, the lessons that you can learn in terms of filmmaking in Breathless are ones that can still be kind of applied in cinema today. I think it's outstanding. I think it's one of my favorite films, absolutely.
Wow, really? That's a bold statement, sir.
I know, but I know I do love it though. I think it's great.
Okay, well, I'm going to make sure that all my windows are closed and I'm in no clear line of sight, because you never know when a diehard cinephile might be waiting on a roof with a high caliber bullet.
Just say it. I know where you're going with this. Just say it.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I didn't like it as a whole. There's things that I can pull out of it and say, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's kind of clever. Oh, I kind of like the intention. But a lot of the execution, I just didn't care for. I mean, straight off, one of the things that irked me straight away is, I mean, granted, I've mentioned before in the past that a lot of films, a lot of contemporary cinema, throws in too much sort of exposition, too much explanation, too much build up. But this film has none. It's literally like, vroom, in a car and away we go. And here's what's happening. We don't know who this guy is. Oh, hang on a minute. Speeding. Bang. Shot a policeman. Don't know why. Mm-hmm. Makes no sense. I'm confused. It just literally gets, I mean, it's good in one sense because it gets the film moving with momentum, and it kind of catches you off guard. And that I can kind of go, that's an interesting choice. It's not particularly one that I think worked very well. I can see the merit in it. I think the execution was a bit too quick off the draw. And I was literally like looking at the screen like, what is going on? Why is this just thrown straight into it? Why is he breaking the fourth wall essentially and talking to me? And then why has he just killed that policeman? He just didn't seem to be provoked at all. And I was a little bit like, okay, so this isn't traditional. This is kind of different. Already I'm seeing it as being a bit unique. Not necessarily for the best of reasons.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, you know, you can sway to one side or the other. I mean, it is such a kind of groundbreaking anti-establishment, anti kind of any kind of cinematic rules that you can, pretty much every rule in the book, Jean-Luc Godard breaks here. Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the interesting things. So many things happen in Breathless that you think are going to be like these important narrative points. And in any other film would be. I mean, one of my notes I wrote down from the film is a scene in which a car driver has a heart attack and dies. And then, you know, the main character basically just walks off. And then it's never mentioned again, and not even referenced again. You know, someone dying in a car crash of a heart attack in most films would be like one of the main dramatic elements. And yet here it's just totally brushed off and it's not got any importance to the film whatsoever. And so, yeah, I mean, Breathless in its like complete essence is a film that basically just kind of puts its middle finger up to all the rules and all the conventions. And I mean, I really admire that. And I think, you know, over time, I mean, Breathless isn't a film I fell in love with straight away because it is just a kind of, what? Like, it really does kind of attack your senses in so many ways. But I think over time, I really kind of came to appreciate just how kind of brave and unique a lot of the things in the film are. I mean, that's not to say that it flows very well and it's not the greatest narrative. But I think, you know, just the essence of what Jean-Luc Godard does and kind of breaks every rule and shows that you can make a film that doesn't conform to the usual kind of literary kind of rules of a narrative, I think that's just very groundbreaking.
That's the thing that I liked about it, that's the thing that I admired, and that's the thing I can say that, you know, from a filmic standpoint, I can say that's interesting. And I think I like the film, for the most part, I like the film's spirit, and I kind of like the fact that it, as you say, sticks a finger up to, you know, what has gone before. And it's kind of like, you know what, instead of even looking at the rule book, we're just going to set it on fire and throw it out the window. We're just going to do whatever we want. And I think that's very important because it kind of opened up so many channels and it made filmmaking obviously a lot more fluid from that point on. You know, it kind of stretched the spectrum of what you can do, because, you know, it sometimes takes somebody that, obviously, the thing is, I find it a bit weird now. I can only imagine what people in 1964 of the film, they would have thought, Jesus Christ, this man's bonkers, you know. And I kind of, I love myself a good eccentric, and I like someone that can do that. One of the big problems for me, though, that kind of halted my kind of really embracing the things that I kind of liked and found interesting about the film is I found it really, really, really hard to connect with any of the characters. Straight away, I just found myself really disliking Michelle, the male lead, who comes across right away as such a sexist, misogynist pig, and he only gets worse from then. And just about every scene he's in, I'm like, I hate this man. Why is he still here? Go away. I mean, it's just so weird. There's no reasoning behind his motives, and he's just really not likable. There's a scene, it's early on, it's like just after it's like I said, he shoots a policeman with no reason to, essentially, other than he's been caught speeding and they're gonna, you know, arrest him or whatever. And it just seems totally ridiculous. And it's like, well, why would you do that? And then he makes a comment about hitchhikers looking like pigs to women. And then he's talking about women drivers are cowards. And I'm like, you are such a misogynist pig. I don't like you at all. And you have just so much just going on. And
yeah, on some level, I think it's probably because Jean-Luc Godard was a misogynistic pig.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, on the other side, though, I think that, like you said, the film is still quite shocking today in terms of what it does. It would have been very different back in the 1960s. And I think that's something you need to kind of bear in mind when you see the character of Michelle, because at the time, there wasn't really such a thing as anti-heroes in French cinema. It was very kind of bound by these kind of very old-fashioned techniques in terms of characters and narrative. And so this was essentially one of the first times, I believe, that we saw like a real kind of villainy kind of character, a hero that doesn't conform to like the total perfect image of what a hero should be. Instead, he was a hero in the sense that he's totally kind of anti-upper class, anti-bourgeois, any kind of authority he kind of shuns and slams. And like in that kind of scene, the whole shooting of the cop thing is sort of a metaphor for that. And so you do kind of have to see him as this kind of really shocking character for this very 1960, especially 1960 France, a time prior to social change. He was, I guess, a really cool character in a way. You know what I mean? He's got like the hat and the glasses. He's more of an American kind of hero with his kind of idealizing Humphrey Bogart and smoking cigarettes and like listening to jazz music. I mean, he was a kind of super cool character because he was just so against the kind of norm and kind of so against the system which you were so used to seeing in French cinema.
It's definitely it's a character that you, I mean, although I don't like him, I definitely can say it's a character that works in the sense that it polarizes opinions, it makes an opinion, and it's interesting you use the phrase anti-hero because that's not something you really saw in cinema until like the early 70s, where it kind of took into like a big bloom, obviously, with stuff like Taxi Driver and Death Wish and what have you. But I mean, you never really saw that sort of shade of character. It was never really that multi-dimensional where you
Yeah, I
had
think
a.
the only times you really saw it were like film noir, basically. I mean,
Yeah.
and that was very much that was a very much an American cinema that came after like the Second World War. Like that wasn't something that French cinema had really done. And yeah.
But I mean, yeah, as much as I didn't like him, as much as he was just a douche, he is interesting nonetheless. And it has that in its favour, I guess, even though I didn't particularly like the film and I didn't particularly like the character, it's definitely something that sticks out. I mean, it's not a boring film, far from it, because it's too frantic, essentially, to be boring. It's kind of jarring. And I mean, a big part of that is because of the aesthetic of the film and the way it's shot. And a lot of the editing, it's kind of it's weird. If you have like motion sickness, I guess some of the jarring quick edit cuts might leave you feeling a little bit woozy because just the way that film, it just the way it's cut, it's weird. It's almost like it's like several takes of the same scene in many scenes stuck together. Like you have like clips from the first, the fifth, the seventh take, the second take, then stuck in. It's weird, but again, it's interesting. It's not something that I particularly go, oh, I'm totally bowled over that by that. It kind of pricks my consciousness, and it makes me think. I kind of like the idea behind it. Not too sure if I'm overly keen on the execution, but again, it's something that kind of makes the film at least stand out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing about Breathless and the whole French New Wave. They wanted to make films that, stood out, and films that had a sort of authorship rather than just being, as I said, films that were dominated by screenwriters. It wasn't about the writing, it's really about the kind of style of the film. And of course, the editing is a big, famous part of Breathless's style. Those weird kind of uncomfortable jump cuts that seems like the camera's just moved slightly to the left or right and then they've cut, and it's really kind of disorienting. And I mean, one of the scenes that I always remember the film is when I think he asks I can't remember the character's name, the girl in the film, but he asks her a question and then it suddenly cuts and he's stood in a different place. And it's just kind of, it's just, you almost would think that's a continuity error. That's a huge continuity error. But then it's too big and too obvious to be a continuity error. It's obviously just something that's kind of what a stylistic device of the film. And again, it's the whole kind of breaking the rules thing that Breathless does.
It's something that again, the film as a whole, it is very polarizing because there's things like I said that I kind of do admire the spirit behind and I admire the intentions. It's just some of that really kind of threw me a little bit, some of the jump cut editing, and I was a little bit like, whoa, hang on, what? No, ah, ooh, this is weird, stop it. And a big issue that occurs with in the film for me is the sound of the film. I actually think the sound mixing is terrible.
Oh no, yeah, I think so, but I think it's intentionally so again. Like, and you I think? Know this is definitely. Well, I don't know, but I think it's just because it's so low budget and because the film, you know, kind of shunned the idea of sets and, you know, doing things professionally and basically just went out with this kind of small guerrilla crew and shot it. Like, I mean, there's a scene in the film where they're having a conversation in the bedroom and you hear a police siren go past. Yeah. And for about maybe a good 10 seconds, the dialogue's totally drowned out by the siren. You know, I mean, it is this kind of very low budget, on the ground, unprofessional aesthetic of the film. So they just kind of went there and did it and kind of obviously didn't do it with a professional top quality sound equipment or even lighting equipment. You can tell that this is something that was very kind of scrappily thrown together. And I think that's kind of the cool charm of the film, you know?
Yes, I kind of see the diamond in the rough appeal with it. It's kind of like it's been sort of hacked to pieces and then stuck together with like sellotape.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of the like shots were done using, I think one of the tracking shots in the film was done on like a wheelchair, like instead of using a puppet dolly. Like, it's just this real kind of, you know, let's just make do with what we've got. In a sense, I think that's quite like one of the reasons why it's inspired a lot of things, like, you know, the American indie films. Like, we've talked Slacker on here before, and I think without Breathless kind of doing these things and showing that you can make such a kind of stylish film without any of the kind of big Hollywood production values, I think it really kind of set the bar for a lot of low budget independent filmmaking.
Oh yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see its influence, and I can see where it's inspired people. It's just.
No, I understand.
It's a frustrating film, and it's very jarring. And for me, the sound mixing, whether it's done intentionally or not, is terrible. I mean, there is, like you mentioned, the siren. There is like a construction crew at one point where you can't see them, but you can hear like machinery and stuff in the background, and it like acts like a drone over the dialogue. And you're like, God, oh, this doesn't go on much longer because I can't really hear what they're saying, and I'm like, it's getting really annoying now. I mean, it's all over the place with its shots, as if it's like hyperactive on E numbers and sugar, and then you just have like microphones planted in the real world with real world noises, and it's like, let's kind of stop this a little bit now. But yeah, the same with the score as well. I found the actual score of the film kind of annoying.
Oh, because it's really,
don't get me wrong, I'm partial to a bit of French jazz, but the score is kind of like the film in the sense that it's all over the place, you know, it's got massive crescendos that just burst through and get really loud and play over the dialogue, and it's like, oh my god, this seems so ramshackled and ham-fisted and just so weirdly disjointed, it's weird. It's just like everything's been stuck in a blender and you're looking at the shredded end products a lot of the time. To which there is, like I say, a certain charm, but I think it was just a bit too much. I think maybe it's a film that I would probably warm to on another watch, maybe with some time in between. But this time round, I was just a little bit like, wow, okay. This is confusing. Yeah. Why are you doing this? Stop it.
See, this is the thing, though. Like, yeah, every time, the first time you watch a film, and I have to say, I wasn't totally head over heels with Breathless the first time I saw it, because you, like, even just, like, as a modern viewer, you go into a film the first time kind of thinking, you know, what's it about? Where's the story going? What kind of twists and turns is it going to take you through? And you are focused on the kind of narrative elements and how it gets from A to B, like, the first time you watch a film. And then when you go back and see Breathless a few times and you know that, you know, it's not a film that has, you know, this kind of plot arc. It's essentially a bunch of conversations kind of put together, which sort of form this kind of thread and with like a few themes in there. Like, I think once you kind of, you know that, and you go and see it a few more times and you kind of focus on some of the more minor elements of the film, I think that's when it all kind of comes together. But I mean, I just want to go back to something you said before, like that you said it's a horror film not to really enjoy. Like, as frustrating and irritating as it can be, and I still find it irritating at times. It's difficult not to be entertained, and I think that's kind of an amazing thing for a film that's so kind of exceptionally art house. You know what I mean? But I think that's one of the cool things about the film. You know that. Cinema, especially in France, I mean, France more so than anywhere else, was kind of bourgeois and something that was kind of, high art in a way. Whereas kind of Breathless came along and made a film that was youthful and, kind of in a way fun, you know what I mean? I believe that, I think Breathless, I hope I'm not thinking of a different film, but kind of got the biggest turnout from that kind of age and that kind of demographic that French cinema had had before. And so I do think it's like a film that resonates, especially with a certain kind of person or a certain group of people. And, it's not just this kind of weird, arty experiment. I think it's a film that, is very deeply well loved by a lot of people and was deeply well loved by a lot of people. At the time, like in the 60s, especially, prior to social change, like of, the 60s and the youth kind of revolt.
I think it's an interesting landmark for sort of French culture and youth culture in France at that time period, because you mentioned it kind of it's placed before sort of social upheaval, especially with like students and young people in France at that time. But I think it's interesting because you kind of have this sense where a lot of French art beforehand was, as you say, very bourgeois, whereas this kind of merits this interesting mesh of sort of youth slash pop culture for France with kind of highbrow stuff. Like you have classical music in there, and it's in with scenes with pictures of like pin-up girls and stuff, and it's kind of got that edgy sort of carefree youthful attitude to it. Yet there's elements of kind of the bourgeois aspects that you've seen from French film before it. And it is almost as if it's kind of saying, hey, we're not just stupid kids, we kind of have a purpose, but at the same time, we don't take ourselves too seriously, and you shouldn't either. And it's an interesting mix. Not saying it works all the way through the film, but again, the overall feeling for me is it's a film which I kind of respect and admire its intentions, and I like its spirit. Just from a practical standpoint, I was very jarred and confused and
Yeah, no,
thrown
totally.
about first time watching it. But I think it's something that might grow on me again. It just might need a little bit of time in between watching it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I still find elements of the film like really irritating. I think the film at its worst kind of gets a bit preachy and turns into a bit of a manifesto. It does turn into Jean-Marc Godard talking about the things that he wants to talk about at times, rather than giving his characters any kind of realistic dialogue. He's just kind of like, let's have this really highbrow intellectual conversation about the exi like existence in the future in cinema and stuff, rather than actually giving his characters realistic dialogue. But I think that's kind of, I think it's just something that Jean-Luc Godard does because he's a bit of a dick, basically. But I think, again, though, seriously, though, I do think that kind of adds to, the cool of the film, the fact that it is kind of having these kind of intellectual kind of conversations about film and about sex and things like that. And it did kind of, I mean, it's that kind of a style, I guess, Breathless. And that's one of the cool things about it. I mean, you can't really point to any French films before Breathless and say, oh, there's that kind of French chic style, you know what I mean? Like sunglasses and the cigarettes and coffee. Like, that's something that is kind of pioneered by Breathless, that style. I mean, I'm sure it existed in France beforehand, but,
It just
you know,
hadn't
it's not
been
something that you
captured.
saw. Yeah, exactly. It's not something you saw in a cinema screen. And, it didn't. I think this is a film that doesn't exist in this kind of bubble that is kind of cinema. I'm trying to think of the best way to say this, but it doesn't just capture this little bubble of French society. I think it really kind of shows you what life was like in Paris in the early 1960s, and it isn't afraid of showing you like the youth culture and kind of the new aspects of society that were they're kind of coming through at the time. And it's a film set kind of on the fringes of Paris as well, which is interesting. It doesn't show you the kind of glamorous picture postcard images. It's set on the kind of rough, seedier side of the city. So yeah, I think it's just kind of got this cool kind of youthful edge that was coming through in France at the time and kind of puts on the big screen for you to see.
It's interesting because that side of France is very much in the sort of canon of what people, associate with France now. You kind of get that element of it as a connotation of France for a lot of people. I know for me specifically, that's the kind of thing I think of now, and it makes you wonder, had Breathless not been the first film to kind of show its more realistic side and kind of capture the more youth-orientated culture of the times, would anybody have actually done it, and would that even now be a part of a lot of people's, fabric of their interpretation of France, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's an argument that French cinema hasn't really moved on since the French New Wave. I mean, I don't totally buy into that. In fact, I totally disagree with that. But you can see, elements of even say like La Haine or Amelie. You can see elements of Breathless coming into those films.
Oh, absolutely.
And
That's
so
a
yeah, I
really
do
good
think it's
film.
interesting the impression that it's made on French culture and the way that the world kind of views French culture. And maybe another film would have done it after Breathless. I mean, I'm sure another film would have done after Breathless, but it's interesting that this seems to be the kind of, the point of conception for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you go. As a bit of Breathless, unless you've got anything else you want to add about the film.
No, absolutely. That's me done.
Awesome. Well, yeah. So two different opinions, but stuff that we can kind of meet on the middle in, I think, is always interesting. If you've seen the film and you want to talk to us about it, then head on over to Facebook. That old place where you can go and look for the Screen Invasion, and then you can find the Film Club forums. Or if you're on Twitter and you want to just send us your thoughts and feelings on Breathless in 140 characters or less, you can do so by heading over to twitter.com/invasionradio and letting us know what you thought of the film there. But it is that time where I get particularly excited. Because it is time for our next pick, and it's time for Dan's pick in our next round of films. What? Just remind us, what was the last film that you picked? I've had a mind blank and I've forgotten.
The last film I picked for Film Club, I think, was The Social Network. Is
That's
that right?
correct. Yes. Yeah, I'm just looking at it now.
So it was The Social Network, and I guess I'm gonna pick another kind of American. Well, I don't know if The Social Network is a classic yet. It deserves to be. But the film that I'm going to choose in this week is definitely an American classic. And I hope that it's something that we'll both enjoy. I think all of our listeners will enjoy. I suppose it's probably one of the most popular crime films in American cinema. A film that came out in the 70s, and it's not just a film that's really intriguing and mysterious, and a film that probably takes a few watches actually to kind of put together all the elements of the story and, to really kind of put together the narrative. But it's not just that, but it's also a great film about, well, that kind of criticizes American crime cinema as well. I mean, one of the main attributes of that genre is that you have a kind of rugged hero who overcomes the problem that he's facing and kind of saves the day. And this film kind of shuns that and has this very, very controversial, shocking side to it, especially in the 1970s when it was made, that kind of says, here's the main character who doesn't overcome his problems, who doesn't beat the bad guy, and in the end is kind of, the loser. And it's a film that says a lot about its filmmaker as well. So there's so many interesting elements to this film, so many interesting layers. The film that I'm choosing for Film Club in 2 weeks' time is Chinatown by
Yeah, I
Roman Polanski.
knew it. As soon as you said one of the best American crime films, I was thinking, is he gonna pick Chinatown? And then the more you carried on, I was like, yeah, it's gotta be. It sounds so much like it's gotta be Chinatown. Oh, what a good pick. I haven't seen that for years either.
Really, I
Oh.
mean, it's one of my favorite films. I'm sure that's probably why you guessed, because I love Chinatown, and any chance I get to talk about it, I will talk about it. Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, it's essentially the story of Jake Gittes, who's played by Jack Nicholson, in one of Jack Nicholson's best roles. It's a
Oh,
lot
yeah.
of a it's very much an understated role. He's good at doing that kind of waffle over the cuckoo's nest kind of thing, but this is very much an understated role, and he's amazing in it. And he plays this private detective who's kind of assigned to this adultery case. But then it turns out that he's kind of been set up, and the guy that he's been taking pictures of having this affair has also been set up, and it kind of plunges him headfirst into this huge story of corruption, which has something to do with the water of Los Angeles, and it tells a story of this kind of changing Los Angeles, and also about, I mean, a lot of the themes of the story to do with corruption and how, America, according to Roman Polanski, who of course went through a horrendous time himself living in America and was going through the Sharon Tate thing, and a lot of his family before moving there were lost during the war, I think, in the Holocaust. And so he kind of tackles this theme of corruption, not as this kind of, underdog who overcomes it, but as someone who becomes part of the system and is just beaten by it. There are powerful people who just shove him down and the entire kind of society around him down. And it's very cynical and very depressing. And especially the ending, which is, I mean, very infamous and has that infamous last line, "Forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown." It's a film that kind of shuns that convention of the hero kind of saving, the girl and, winning and defeating his villains. And it's just such an interesting film that's so well written and so well put together and so well directed by Roman Polanski too. It's a crime film that I think you can enjoy simply for its story, but if you want to crack under the surface a little bit and see a lot of these layers and, kind of draw parallels between Roman Polanski's life with the story of this film, there is so much to explore there too. So yeah, I hope everyone enjoys this one. I certainly love this film.
It's interesting. Because I never really thought about it, about how his life is kind of paralleled through the sort of narrative. But that's going to be kind of interesting to have in the back of my head when I rewatch this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, like as I said, a lot of his experiences in America weren't good for him. And I think he saw this very cynical, dark side to America and then did Chinatown, which is essentially this kind of quintessential American genre with this kind of quintessential American hero, and then just puts this total cynical, depressing, and nihilistic spin on it. And it's really interesting.
From what I remember, it is quite a brutal and blunt film in
Oh yeah,
places.
I mean, there's some really dark things in there, especially considering it's what, like 30, 40 years old now. Like, there's a lot of very, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much of it, but some pretty twisted themes and events in the film. So yeah, there's a lot to look forward to in that instance.
Man, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I've not seen it for a good few years, so awesome. So there you go, Chinatown. And you should get on that. If you haven't got a copy, go find yourself one. Pretty sure you can find one with ease. Go watch and then come and discuss. As I mentioned over at Facebook, look for Screen Invasion and then look for the Film Club forums. Or as I mentioned as well before, if you're on Twitter, head over to twitter.com/invasionradio. If you're just jumping into this as a little sort of ending point, because this is going to be, well, we've done 18 films and we're heading into our 19th. It's amazing how quickly our collection has kind of built up from last year. But if you're kind of wanting to backtrack, perhaps this is your first jump into Film Club and you're kind of wanting to dive back into some of the other films that we've got, but you're not quite sure how to do so. What I'm going to do for you this week is I'm going to put a link in the show notes at screeninvasion.com in which I have made a sort of ongoing rolling list, as it were, of all the films that we've covered in order so far over at a website called letterboxd.com, who aren't sponsoring us. But if you're listening or anyone from Letterboxd is listening and you want to sponsor us, seems like a perfect match to me. But head on over to screeninvasion.com and you can see the link there and you can be taken to that list and see exactly what it is we've got in our collection and how it's shaping up so far. It's pretty damn eclectic, I must admit. I'm just looking at it now. We've got Alien, Evil Dead, Punch Drunk, Love, Seven Samurai in there, Unforgiven, Goonies, Breaking the Waves. How could we forget Breaking the Waves?
That was an infamous episode for sure.
And our latest edition is Breathless, which hopefully you'll have seen. Because if you haven't and you're listening to this, we might have spoiled it for you. But we did warn you beforehand. So, but anyway, go ahead and go get yourself a copy of Chinatown. Enjoy, especially if you haven't seen it before. Savor it, and come back in 2 weeks, and we'll talk all things Polanski and corruption and crime and grittiness and Nicholson, who's always a treat to talk about. But until then, go watch, enjoy, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Yeah.
Nice.
That's a really good pick.